Are you listening to us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or any other platform where you can leave a rate or review? Do you like what we're doing? If the answer to all of that is yes, please consider quickly giving us a 5-star rate. And if you wouldn't mind leaving us a nice review, we greatly appreciate that as well. Okay, let's do this.
Hello, welcome to the Ghosts of Harrenhal. My name's Simon.
And I'm McKelly.
Thank you for joining us for episode 193 of our chapter-by-chapter book review of A Song of Ice and Fire by George Martin. Today, we'll be discussing chapter 49 of A Storm of Swords. That's Catelyn 6.
And as always, we're going to chat about the chapter and try not to spoil any future plot points for you. Hopefully, we're going to provide you some entertainment along the way.
Summarize what happened, discuss our thoughts on it, provide some useful background, compare it to the television show, indulge a little pedantry, and cover some relevant news and listener correspondence. Be sure to check out the show notes, that'll provide some additional information about the characters and geography of this chapter. How are you?
I'm doing well. We just had a really fun wildfire side chat conversation.
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun. And as I mentioned then, Heart of Glass stuck in my head.
Stuck in your head.
So that's great. Hopefully, some rigorous discussion about Cat 6 of A Storm of Swords might push it out, or at least hide it for a bit.
I'm going to try to remember every so often to either say the word heart, glass, or blondie, and see if I just can't keep it going along there. If you become a sustainer, you can find out what the heck is going on in McKelly's head.
Oh,
I highly recommend it.
Beware, though. You got to go in there. You got to tread carefully. You got to know what you're getting into if you're going to get inside my head.
Particularly if we have any psychiatrists amongst our listeners.
Right. Dr. Honda, please. If you're listening.
what's going on with you?
You know what I learned this morning? You know, at the top of my yard by the road. Right by the road. I've got two large mature trees.
Okay.
The one furthest away from the driveway is dying.
That's too bad.
I know. I don't know what the landscape's going to look like without it. They're twins, you know. They flank the front yard. And now it's just going to be one tree. And it's going to cost me like $1,400 to get it removed and all that stuff.
We had 10 removed, 10 trees.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah.
That left
a scar, not just in the yard.
Right. I can imagine. Yeah, I got a quote for that tree out. And then he's like, well, while I'm here, I can go around the property and give you a quote for anything else. And all in all, it came to like $40-some hundred, but that wasn't for 10 trees being taken out. Mm-hmm. So, yes.
Yeah.
I don't envy that. There's one tree, you know, where we live, we have this type of pine tree called a loblolly pine, which the way you remember it is it looks like a lollipop. Like there's no branches for probably the first, I don't know, 50 feet. And then all the branches start at the top and they go out kind of like a lollipop would. And I believe I was told once that this part of the country was like the largest loblolly forest in North America or the world or something like that, East Coast, I don't know. It was a big one. And so, but, you know, due to developments and all that kind of thing, the forest has basically come down to what's in your backyards and stuff like that.
Right.
And they sway, because they're so top heavy, they sway a lot in a storm. Mm-hmm. And there is one that only has branches on the side that face the house. And it's got to be, the guy was saying he was thinking it was maybe 125 to 150 feet tall. Beach. And, you know, I was like, that's the tree that makes me nervous. And he didn't think it was that big a deal. He said it had other trees around it enough to buffer it from the wind. He didn't think it was a major urgency. Mm-hmm. But if I had to take that thing out, that'd be a pretty penny right there.
Yeah. My guy, his sort of philosophy was if it was going to fall away from my house, he was fine with it. But if it was going to fall onto my house, he was getting rid of it.
What about onto a car?
Well, that just happens. And actually, it's the pine trees that do that because the reason it ends up looking like a lollipop is because it drops its lower branches, right?
Once, oh, yeah.
It didn't start with 100 feet of nothing and then grow some branches.
Right. Yes.
It lost the branches as it went.
Right. Yes. So
things that will kill you in America.
Snakes.
There's just so many.
Poison ivy.
Dangerous.
Loblolly trees. So I was just talking to a friend of ours, and she mentioned that you were busting on me and her in a call recently about something to do with about Ted Lasso, but she couldn't remember specifically what you were busting on me about.
Well,
I guessed. I did take a guess at what you were busting on me about.
I'm sure you're right. The thing is, I don't want to, again, I've mentioned this on the Discord server. It's not my favorite show. It was okay for a little while, but it was like being fed spoonfuls of sugar. That first taste of it was delicious. It was like, oh, wow, that's an amazing taste. But they keep spoon feeding you that. It's going to get pretty nauseous pretty quickly. Uh-huh. And that is what happened.
And so my guess was your comments about me were in regards to the fact that that show is so syrupy sweet that only people such as me would enjoy that kind of show or that particular show.
You know it as well as I know it. That's good. I'm encouraged. I don't feel I maligned you by saying this now.
So I was correct in my assumption.
Oh, yes. That's exactly what I said. Plus, I have you watched it all?
We just finished last night with the final season series finale.
The third season is terrible television. I mean, the first two were funny and sweet, but that third season is a complete mess. The bloated. I mean, it's not a show which justifies 70-minute episodes.
Right. Yes.
The whole thing seems to have been filmed on a green screen. They're never in the same room together.
I had some issues with
the character arcs make no sense.
Yes. And I felt like they didn't focus enough on the things that made the show what it was. There was a lot of like going off in weird directions, and there wasn't enough Roy Kent for my taste. For me, the more Roy Kent the better. So
aren't I your Roy Kent in real life?
Does that make me your Jamie Tart, or
maybe? Well, should we get down to business?
Yes, I guess we should.
Well, that's good.
Unbeknownst to our listeners, we had a very long glitch here that's cost us about 10 minutes of recording time.
It'll be fine. All right, let us then get down to business. How did we leave Catelyn Stark? So last we saw of Cat, she was traveling through the rain with King Rob's entourage, without most of the Westerlings, to her brother's wedding venue at the Twins. She snapped at Edmure for worrying only about the looks of his betrothed. Rob dropped the news on her that if he should die childless, he wants Jon Snow to be his heir. Cat did not like that idea. She also hears of Rob's plans to get past Moat Cailin using the help of the Crannog men to attack the fortress from multiple sides, and also to sideline her to Seaguard. McKelly, why don't we give the summary of this one?
Okay. Well, Cat, King Rob, Edmure, and all the King's men have finally arrived at the Twins. As they approach the castle, Cat urges Rob to ask for food and wine if none is offered. That will give the king and his people guest right and ensure no harm will come to them during their stay.
Four Freys emerge from the western castle to welcome Rob and company. Grey Wind has a welcome message of his own to deliver. The direwolf leaps forward and snarls at the men. Only Cat cutting between Grey Wind and the Freys prevents the direwolf from possibly attacking. The Freys do not take kindly to this show of aggression.
Black Walder tells Rob he's late and wants to know where the woman is, referring to Queen Jane. Rob explains she stayed at River Run due to fatigue. Edwin tells Rob that accommodations have been made for him and his bannermen. However, his men will sleep and feast outside with the Freymen on the east bank of the river. Edmure couldn't care less about any of this. He just wants to see his blind date, or his future bride.
The same thing.
Yeah.
More challenges arise at the castle drawbridge when Grey Wind refuses to cross it, growling and howling. Only Rob's soothing tones calm him. Rob instructs Sir Reynold Westerling to stay with Grey Wind, a move Cat approves of as it keeps the Westerling out of the Frey court.
They find Lord Walder seated in the great hall of the eastern castle, surrounded by a sea of Freys. His eighth wife stands beside the high seat, and a man who looks much like a younger version of Lord Walder, only wearing a fool's outfit, sits at the foot of the seat. Walder greets the king without kneeling, claiming his bad knees, and tells Rob that his bronze crown is a sign of a poor king. Rob takes the insults in stride.
Walder Frey introduces the man in the fool's outfit as Jingle Bells, a lackwit son of the late Sir Stevron. Walder asks for Queen Jane and is sad to learn she's not present, as she must be very fair to look upon, much more so than his own get. Otherwise, she wouldn't have caused the king to forget his promise.
Rob again handles the snide remark well, saying he's come to apologize for the wrong he's done to House Frey. Walder says it's his daughters that he owes the apology to. He then introduces each woman and girl in turn. They range from adult to 4 years old. Walder remembers some names, but not all of them. He finishes by adding that none were good enough for the king in the north.
Rob gives the customary, "It's me, not you," speech, saying that he was in love with another, ending with, "No words can set it right." Of that, Lord Walder agrees. Next on the agenda is the introduction of the bridal party. Finally, Edmure gets to meet his future bride, and all his fears have been put to rest. Roslyn Frey is very fetching.
Roslyn begins to cry tears of joy at meeting Edmure. Lord Walder has had enough of the mushy-gushy stuff. He sends Roslyn away to prepare for the wedding and the bedding. He begins to dismiss all present, but then Kat remembers her advice to Rob about guest right. She asks for food, and food is provided. Eating makes Kat feel a bit better.
He perhaps was hungry.
It could have been hungry. I wonder if it was a Snickers bar that they fed her.
Kat is surprised at the lush accommodations Walder has provided for Rob and company, down to the Tully colour scheme in her finely appointed rooms. Edmure tells Kat how much he likes Roslyn and wonders why Lord Walder would offer such a beautiful daughter. He wonders if it's possible she's barren. Kat doubts it, but can't rule it out. Walder's a jerk, but he is smart. Getting a daughter married to the Lord of Riverrun is a coup. Having her be barren would rather undo the honour.
Indeed. Kat leaves Edmure in search of Sir Perwin Frey, who accompanied her to Storm's End when she met with Stannis and Renly. Seems Sir Perwin is away, and the flooding has made it hard for him to make it back. She then visits the castle's maester and is assured that Roslyn is indeed fertile. With that, Kat heads to Rob's rooms, where she finds Roose Bolton present among Rob's bannermen. She feels the somber mood in the room.
Just emanating from Roose, I assume.
Yes.
Roose recounts what he's told the men. While crossing the Swollen Trident via small boats, one third of Roose's army was attacked on the southern bank by Gregor Clegane and men, and killed or captured. Roose left a force of 600 at the river to prevent the mountain from harassing Rob's push northward. News from the north is equally bleak. Roose confirms the tale of Theon Greyjoy sacking Winterfell and killing the boys. He adds that Roose's bastard son Ramsay picked up the fight when Sir Roderick Cassel died, and saved some of the Winterfell people. He's keeping them safe at the Dreadfort.
When asked about Theon, Roose answers by revealing a roll of skin taken from Theon's left pinky finger, a gift from his son Ramsay. Kat is both thankful and repulsed. Rob wants Theon killed, but Roose suggests he keep Theon for ransom, not to be freed. Instead, use his execution to extract concessions from whichever Ironborn wins the Seastone Chair. Theon does have the best claim as Lord of the Iron Islands, after all.
When the debacle at Duskendale is brought up, Rob says Robert Glover will answer for that. Roose explains Glover became heedless after learning that Deepwood Mott had fallen. Roose tells Kat he's arrived at the Twins with 3,500 men, mostly Bolton and Karstark. Best to keep the uncertain Karstark men under close watch. Rob is pleased with the work that Roose has done and installs him as commander of the rearguard when they go north after the wedding.
Ooh. Well, all in all, that wasn't so bad.
No, I mean, Walder pushed the limits of what you can say to a king even when you are justifiably mad at him. But
Yes, he did.
He only pushed it. He didn't ever really... He didn't get sort of Rickard Karstark on him.
He didn't go Rickard Karstark. That is true. Yeah, and you know, Kat starts out very worried about the Frey behavior that they were about to endure, to the point of making sure that Rob knows of the concept of guest right. And you know, as a parent, I can understand over-preparing for a son's ordeal that he is about to face, but I don't know, worrying about guest right, taking it a bit too far. I mean, we are dealing with their king and their liege lord here.
So the concept of guest right is once you've shared food with your guest, they are now under your protection and nothing bad will befall them in your home.
Yes, yeah. We'll get into it in background, but that's the basic gist of it, yes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. If Walder Frey's got some treachery up his sleeve, I don't think that kind of thing is going to stop him, even if it is tradition. You know, that's the worry. I mean, I totally understand why you would push for it as quickly as possible, but he is who he is. But honestly, though, I'm reassured, because if he'd been like, welcome, I'll think nothing of it, then I'd be more worried. But the fact that he did, you know, rip a few strips off Rob makes me feel a little bit better, that he's willing to bury the hatchet, perhaps.
Yeah, you're right. He certainly raked them across the coals a good bit.
Yeah.
And, you know, so maybe that was him getting it out of his system.
Yeah.
Greywind, on the other hand,
is
not a fan of the phrase or of the twins in general, meaning the castle. I'm sure there's some twin phrase as well, but...
Almost certainly, yeah.
Right. it seems like he didn't like them, even more so than he didn't like Rolf Spicer, who's Jane Westerling's uncle.
I will say that Rolf Spicer hasn't done anything treacherous yet. Greywind may just be a little bit trigger happy, and let's hope so. But my instinct with this book is to trust the direwolves and to not trust anyone that the direwolves don't trust.
We'll be right back.
Hello, friends. Are you ready to make some unforgettable memories? Well, if so, consider the Marriott Bonvoy program. Discover the perfect destination for your summer getaway and unlock exclusive deals on luxurious accommodations. With our affiliate partnership, you'll enjoy unbeatable savings and a seamless booking experience. Don't let summer slip away. Visit Marriott Bonvoy today and make this vacation season one for the books. Use our Ghosts of Harrenhal affiliate page to check it all out and buy Bonvoy points or give some as a gift. The link to our page is in the show notes. Yeah, and previously, Kat was so caught up in the fact that Greywind didn't like Rolf Spicer that, you know, she was very focused on this. The direwolves are your spirit animals. They're there to look out for you. She was seemed a little less disconcerted about, you know, his behavior here, at least as we got in her internal thoughts.
I think you raise a very good point. That's almost to the point of pedantry, how much she cared about Greywind's reaction to the to Rolf Spicer in particular, how little she seems to. But maybe that's because she believed that Rolf Spicer should be Rob's friend. No reason for him not to be Rob's friend. And if Greywind doesn't like you, then something's wrong with you. Here, she knew that those Freys who came out to meet them and got attacked by Greywind were basically at that point at odds with Rob. And perhaps Greywind sensed that, and she just, you know, she was expecting it. Now, I would like to bring him back into the situation now and see again. Now that we've aired our grievances, how are things now? And if Greywind, like, rolls over and lets you tickle his belly, great.
Basically, treat him like the canary in the...
Exactly. Yeah.
See if how he handles the situation. Yeah, there was certainly some... I almost said frayed. Frayed nerves on the side of the phrase. They came into the situation probably feeling a bit of pent-up anger and hostility. I mean, they stormed out of River Run and, you know, the Crag when Rob married Jane. So there was some hostility there, and animals can pick up on things like that. So it's possible he was just being defensive of
Right, and that's the other Rob. Thing. When the four Freys came across to meet them, I'm sure Kat was giving off the vibe of, oh God, oh God, oh God. And that might well have triggered Greywind, you know?
Yes. I think the little boy from Jerry Maguire said that dogs and bees smell fear, right? So if we trust him on his statement, then, you know, he very well could have been picking up on the fear that either side. It's possible also that the Freys, although they were acting all tough and in control, were also nervous about how this situation was going to go with the king rolling up and their liege lord and all their men.
Yeah, because it could have gone the opposite way. It could have gone, they came in to say, look, it's up to us who we marry. Suck it up, buttercup.
Right, yeah.
I am curious that you're using the kid from Jerry Maguire as an oracle of some sort.
I know. I also know the human head weighs 8 pounds or whatever he says.
More useless skills.
There we go. But I do think keeping Reynold Westerling out of view and out of court of the Freys was probably a pretty good idea.
Yeah. And it is interesting that Grey Wind is very specific with which Westerlings he doesn't like. It's Rolf Spicer, right? I mean, because
yeah,
he's been left with a Westerling. Right. Fortunate if it was like, well, you're not a Frey, but I still don't like you either.
Yes, I think it was Rolf Spicer, possibly also the mother, maybe. I could have looked ahead of time, but I can't. I know it's for certain Rolf Spicer because that's why he was sent away.
Yeah.
Oh, so, you know, Rob and company are hosted here. They're hosted in the Water Tower, which is kind of in between. Is the middle of the river. There's a tower, and it's got the two twins on each side. And I'm sure it's probably lovely looking out over the water as such, being right over the middle of it. But it also puts them in a bit possibly of a precarious situation as they are kind of trapped on both sides by Freys, and it's probably not a big deal, but Kat's safety concerns set the tone early of being wary of things. And so as I was reading it, I was like, well, they're stuck right in the middle. It's not like they're in one of the castles or the other.
Yeah.
They're right in the center of the
two. You got to imagine that is the spiritual home of the Freys, is that center. Because one of the advantages of having the two castles is that the center of the bridge is protected from both directions. So that's where you'd put your own rooms and your throne sure. room, etc. So that's where your court would be based.
I think theirs is based in the Eastern Castle.
Oh.
But...
Well, that's weird then.
Weird. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure it's beautiful. Like I said, you know, you're right out over the water. It's probably very peaceful and, you know, a very nice view from the center of the river. But it does put them right in the hardest place for them to
and you know, separated get from their men because the
right.
men
if they're on the eastern
account.
Castle,
yeah,
their men are on the eastern side.
Yeah.
So, and then it made me wonder: should Kat be here at all? Because it puts most of the remaining Stark-Tully leadership all in one place at one time, in a place that they concern might be hostile. So, you know, what if Rob doesn't eat the crow as well as he does and things get a little touchy?
But the fewer people you bring, the more people you leave at home, the more the slap of the face is.
Yes,
you know?
Right.
So you've got to come in force to make your apologies together.
That is a concern you'd have to have. And of course, by the end of the chapter, it seems that none of this is a concern. Rob handles himself really well, almost a little too well. We'll discuss that in a minute. But so far, you know, he's done a really good job of taking the barbs in stride.
Yeah. Well, honestly, though, I will say for the taking it in stride, he deserves every single one of them. He broke a promise and right. such an important promise. You know, the Freys are prickly about their honor and they had got their daughter betrothed to the King in the North. And
yes.
they were going to be the family of the King in the North. And now they're not. Now they're, it's like,
yes.
How do you apologize for that, Rob? What is it you do to make up for that?
Well, as Walter Frey says, no words can make up for it. That's right.
Yeah.
when Rob says that. Yeah, that's a big step down. It'd be a huge disappointment, especially for a family and the Lord who is so focused on climbing the ladder.
Exactly,
you know?
Yeah. So Sir Stevron, his family, tell me who was the welcoming committee?
So the welcoming committee was Reynold Westerling, who is Devron's oldest, and then his three sons, who were Edwin, Blackwalder, and Peter, a.k.a. Peter Pimple.
Oh, right. We've met Blackwalder before. He came to Riverrun.
That was Walter Rivers, I think.
Oh, I'm thinking of Walter Rivers. You're right. You're absolutely right. Yeah. That's who I'm thinking
of. They're both kind of a similar temperament. I was thinking it was him as well.
Okay.
At first, when I first read it. But yes. So Sir Stevron, he was the heir, the eldest of Walter's many children.
Mm-hmm.
And, what we saw and what we heard from the thoughts of our POV characters, he seemed like an oddly nice guy for being Lord Walder's heir. He was in his 60s and he died from a wound during the Battle of Oxcross. But it was kind of odd because the wound didn't seem very serious. But then he was found dead in his tent 3 days later. So, that was a little weird. And Kat had told, or Rob had told Kat that if Stevron had lived, if he was alive, that he would have been able to make amends with the Freys, but that without Stevron, the other Freys were just being unreasonable when it came to him marrying Jane. But of course, as you just said, that's a pretty big slap in the face.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But now the Ryman that was there to greet them, he is now heir as the oldest son of Sir Stevron.
Right. Yep.
One kind of fascinating thing that I realized while thinking about Sir Stevron and Lord Walder is that, follow this math with me here, Lord Walder is 91 years old.
Uh-huh.
Sir Stevron, as best we know, Big Walder thought, Big Walder of the two Walders and Winterfell, thought that Stevron was 65 when he died. So that means that Walder Frey didn't have his first kid until he was in his mid-20s, at least one that had survived to adulthood.
But then has spent 65 years making up for lost time.
Yes. It just feels like someone who has 20-some, almost 30 kids wouldn't have waited till their mid-20s to get started on that family.
It's a good point. It's a reasonable point.
Yeah, it just dawned on me today when I was thinking about Sir Stevron being the heir. And I was like, wait, he was only in his 60s.
Yeah. So at least two of the Freys are disappointed that Jane Westerling is not present. Black Walder expresses his disappointment. And Lord Walder also has the same reaction. I think you would be curious. You would be curious what it was that you lost out to.
Yes.
So I do understand that.
I thought there was probably two reasons for the disappointment. One is just that. They want to see the woman who caused Rob to break such an important oath to hit one of his bannermen.
Well, I guess what the second idea is.
Well, go right ahead.
Here's what I guess you're going to say, because that's not in the notes. This is the true guess here. You're going to say Lord Walder was going to turn his barbs on her to see how far he could push Robb Stark.
We'll be right back.
This episode is sponsored by Audible. To get a free audiobook, or two if you're an Amazon Prime member, go to our exclusive URL, audibletrial.com/ghostsharrenhal. You can find the link in our show notes. More or less, yes. I was going to say he was looking forward to giving her a hard time.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yes.
But in particular, because he knows that would give Rob a harder time than him just saying,
yes,
is it a brass crown? Not brass.
That's your bronze crown.
Your bronze crown is a sign of a poor king,
Uh-huh. Yeah. And you're right. That is the exact argument that Kat made for leaving Jane behind that Rob would be fine with dealing with, comments made toward him, but not made toward his wife. He's too much like Ned Stark. Also bristle at that. So,
and when we get to the TV show, I'll mention that in the TV show they brought her along, and basically, as predicted by Kat, Rob could survive the challenges to him, but he bridled when the wife got abused.
Uh-huh.
So why do you think Rob was too good at handling the abuse?
Well, it's just like he handled it so well. He was so humble, so repentant, so understanding of the barbs and the snide comments and the derogatory comments. I was worried that it was getting to the point where he was being pushed around and possibly losing their respect a bit, that he didn't have a little bit more of a presence, as, you know, commanding presence in the room.
That's an interesting point, because of course at some point you do have to reestablish the fact that you're in charge.
You're the king. Right. Right.
However, what's interesting about that situation is it was really just the Tullys, Starks, and the Freys. There weren't a whole host of Riverlands bannermen witnessing all this.
Right. That's true.
And that might be a sort of determining factor here. If it's just the phrase, you've come to abase yourself to the phrase, and abase yourself you will. If all of the Riverlands bannermen were gathered to witness this, I think Rob might have had a different reaction and might have drawn a line under it quicker.
That is probably likely. Yeah. Yes, I could see that. It's just, you know, they were saying some really unpleasant things. Like, you know, when the Freys arrive, you know, when they come out to greet them, and, you know, Black Walder is scolding him about Rob, about the wolf. Is this how Starks make amends? Poor greeting, I call it. And then calling the queen, Rob's wife, that woman. I mean, you know, that was just before they even got into the castle. They were already taking shots at Rob. It just felt like, is this going to have a long-term impact on the way that the Freys see Rob, that he's just some boy that they can push around, because that's what they did this whole time, was push him around?
I don't know. I think the Freys would be foolish to think that.
I agree. I just wonder.
I think tomorrow you better stop pushing him around. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And if I were the Freys, I would know that too.
Possibly. I hope so. I hope they're smart enough to realize, okay, extract your pound of flesh, and now remember who's in charge here.
So there's an Egan Frey who goes by the name Jingle Bells, who is some kind of slow-witted fool, is how he's been treated there. But there's more to this? Do tell.
Well, so the more to it is that he was the second oldest of Stevron's children.
Okay.
Which means at one point he was fourth in line as Lord of the Twins until Ryman then went and had three sons that we met at the beginning of the chapter.
Oh. So Ryman is a grandson, but there are great grandchildren now who've jumped ahead of him. Right.
Yes. Right. Yes. So Ryman was Ryman is Aegon Jinglebill's older brother.
Right. Yeah. I got it.
So but at one point Aegon, a.k.a. Jingle Bells, was fourth in line to Lord of the Twins. So I just thought that was worth mentioning.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't just some random Frey somewhere down in the line.
Do we know if something happened to him? Did he have an accident, or was he born this way?
We don't know. Okay. Yeah, we don't know. But Kat wonders if he always dresses like a fool, or if this is a dig at Rob. And, you know, normally I would feel like that's a paranoid thought, but under these circumstances, I can understand why she had that thought, you know.
But now, let's cut to the most important part of the chapter, at least for Edmure Tully.
The only part.
How cute is Rosalind Frey? She is bizarrely cute. She is way cuter than every other Frey there's ever been, so he is hugely relieved.
Yeah, so here's what we know about Rosalind Frey. She's somewhere around 16 to 17 years old. Edmure is somewhere between 25 and 32, as best as it can be pieced together. So he's a good bit older than her. And Kat correctly recalls that she is the daughter of the sixth Lady Frey, who was a Rosby. It was actually Bethany Rosby, so good on Kat for that.
Yeah.
Bethany Rosby died somewhere between 282 and 284. We know this because the seventh wife gave birth to a child in 285. He had remarried before that. Rosalind, as the Maester tells us, is the youngest daughter of Bethany Rosby. Bethany Rosby. And it's kind of sad that Sir Perwin likely won't make it back for the wedding because he is the oldest of Bethany's children, and Rosalind is his only full-blood little sister.
I see. So that's that relationship. Okay.
Yes, but it definitely seems like Edmure is happy with what he sees of Rosalind.
Yeah. I will say, I think the whole is she barren is a sort of like a red herring, because it just doesn't make any sense to me that you would... You're getting something, being married to one of your daughters is going to be the Lady of Riverrun is not nothing. And then to deny that family children who would be half Freys by choosing someone who's intentionally barren just seems a bit weird. But it's also kind of weird that the Maester is so confident that she isn't barren, because it's like, she's just a young girl. You don't know whether she's going to have kids or not. But he's basing it on her family. Her mother was fecund. Yes. And of a similar build to Rosalind. The portents are good.
Yes, I think definitely Lord Walder is smarter than he seems. And despite it all, maybe he realizes that marrying his daughter to his liege lord is a great opportunity for the Freys. Not as great as marrying the king in the north, granted, but it's still not a bad opportunity. So when all is said and done, he's going to put his best foot forward.
But you could argue that when the deal was struck with Robb Stark, he was only Lord of Winterfell. So in actual fact, this honor is as high as the original deal honor.
That it was, yes, because it wasn't until they were at Riverrun that they decided that he was going to be the king in the north.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and they had to cross the Green Fork to get there.
Yep.
I will say, Kat's not so impressed by Rosalind. She thinks she's too petite for easy childbearing and prefers the hardier Crakehall stock. And remember, Robb asked Kat to go to the twins and assess bride options for him. So it's possible, based on what she finds appealing in a bride, he might have ended up marrying a Crakehall.
Good to know. Yes.
So, question. Why was Rosalind crying? Kat suggests it's a maid on the eve of her wedding. But I wondered, could she be in love with someone else, or just not one to marry in general, a la Brendan Blackfish Tully?
Oh, I don't know. That's interesting. I hadn't thought of that. At first I put it down to, you know, what it seemed on paper, which is, you know, she's a 16-year-old girl about to get married. Probably tears are pretty close all the time at that point. But there was something about the way that Walder shooed her out of there.
Uh-huh. Which made I had the same thought. Think that he immediately cuts off when she says, "I'm crying tears of joy." Yes.
Yeah.
So I'm with you. Was he afraid she might say something he doesn't want shared with guests? Like, "But I'm pregnant with someone else's child." Or, you know, something.
Oh, something believe else. Me, she's not barren.
Yeah. So it very well could be, like Kat suggests, just she's a 16-year-old girl about to get married to a man who's possibly twice her age.
Yeah. And you can also imagine that Walder Frey has a very low tolerance for, you know, 16-year-old steers. So it could you're absolutely right. It could just be that. But there was something a bit weird about it. I never thought about the fact that she might have somebody else on the side. How interesting.
Yeah.
You could write this stuff, McKelly.
Along with my song lyrics.
So you were mentioning how snazzy their apartments were in the water tower, including being decked out in Tully colors. I wonder, this to me, I'm actually more reassured by this than I was by the food, because this is kind of like, this was all prepared. It was all prepared to be nice to them, but just on the way to it, we're going to be unpleasant. But we'll put that unpleasantness behind us. We'll have a fun wedding and everything is going to be good. So I'm encouraged by that.
It certainly still benefits the phrase greatly to be back in the good graces of the King of the North and their liege lord.
Absolutely, yeah.
Emir Tully. Yeah. So, but, you know, Kat seems surprised and impressed, as does Edmure. They discuss it a little bit. And then Kat thinks she can't wait for this to be behind them, though. And then she thinks, and when this is behind us, I am off to Seaguard to, you know, mm-hmm. while away the time while Rob mm-hmm. fights his way through the neck. Yeah. And it seems like she's accepted her fate regarding going to Seaguard after the wedding while, you know, Rob does his thing.
You've got to think, from her perspective, her journey through the book so far has been one of trying to get justice for her children, trying to keep her family together, trying to see and get back to her family. And right. all of this is kind of like crumbled around her ears now. I mean, like the only two children she is confident are alive are Rob and Sansa. And she knows she's right. never going to see Sansa again until this is all over. So mm-hmm. being, you know, she's got very little reason to be part of the inner circle now, because it's not like she's expecting Arya to show up at the wedding. However, it could change things.
Wedding gift.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, she's really not even had time to grieve the loss of her husband, let alone the loss of her children.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
She's...
I will say in passing, actually, that I thought that this, partly because the TV show sort of crammed it together, I thought this chapter was going to be the wedding. I was all excited. I had confetti and everything ready to throw. Imagine my disappointment.
Party poppers.
Just, yeah, exactly. Just a 91-year-old grumbling and sulking, you know.
Soon enough, we'll get to the wedding.
So Roose Bolton's back in the picture, and he brings poor tidings, but he doesn't take much of the rap for these. But it seems that you could take a view that he's been responsible for some of the failings here.
Yes, you could.
Yeah, but nobody seems to be seeing that. We've had more access to him than perhaps Rob and Kat have,
right?
And we certainly know what Ramsay Bolton's up to better than they do.
Yeah, so to us, we get some old news that is bringing the Starks and Tullys up to speed, and we get a little bit of new news as well. So, you know, the old news, we learned that Clay Serwyn and Leobald Tallheart were both killed in the sacking of Winterfell, and that Winterfell was sacked by Theon, and that Ramsay came to the rescue.
That's not just old news, but that's old lies, right?
Right. Yes, that, you know, that Ramsay is flaying Theon, which all this fits with the story that Gren told Jon last chapter.
Right. I mean, so Gren would know. That junior member of the Night's Watch. 2,000 leagues from any of this action, he'd be the first to know.
He's up on the scuttlebutt with the news in the north. So the question is, does Roos believe what he's saying?
Or is he covering?
Does he know the truth? Yes, and spinning a story to frame the Boltons in a better light.
Yeah. Well,
and
you can imagine that. You can imagine that being true without Roos being very dastardly. He might just want to spin the story in his favor.
Right. You know, it's hard to take his word because we know he's lying about Robert Glover's decision to go to Duskendale.
Right.
Rob says that Robert Glover will answer for Duskendale, and Roose says it was a folly. Glover's heedless after he learned that Deepwood Mott had fallen. But we know, because Arya was in the room when it happened, that it was Roose that sent them to Duskendale. So now I also wonder, does Roose know that Robert is about to be exchanged for Martin Lannister?
Yes, because that would be very interesting to see Roose's reaction when that little bit of news comes out. Wait, what?
What?
Martin Lannister? He's the golden child.
You want to keep him? Trust me.
Train him for Sansa Stark. Robert Glover, that idiot. He lost half your foot.
Yeah, I wonder if this has come up in conversation yet. And one of the things I was going to say about Roose is that Kat thinks him a cold man because he says to all in the room, yeah, you know, maybe what Ramsay's doing might help make up for the terrible things that he's done. But if he doesn't, if it doesn't help his cause, that's okay. I'm hoping to have a new trueborn son with my new wife anyway.
Yes.
And Kat thinks, well, this is a cold man here.
Yeah.
And if he's being truthful and really doesn't care what happens to Ramsay because he's hoping to have a new trueborn son, that's pretty cold. But when you think about it, what is he supposed to say in this position?
Right,
you know?
Right.
Ramsay's been accused of terrible crimes. He's already distanced himself from him. So, you know,
I'm really thinking of legitimizing that kid because, like, he's really, I mean, like, see this bit of Theon's finger? That's a real Bolton right there.
Yeah, look at this flaying work. This is top-notch flaying work here.
There was new news, too.
So, the new news basically surrounds the Mountain's attack on the Northmen on the Trident and that Willis Manderly was captured again. So, you know.
Because he can't run away.
It might be. Maybe he needed the boat all to himself. And they were waiting for him to come across last. You know, we saw the river in Arya 9. So
quite
the
wide.
Story does. Yeah. Yes, it does hold, shall I say, water. It did work out quite well for Bruce that it was mostly Bolton men that made it across safely. And it doesn't work out well for Rob that the second biggest group seems to have been the Karstarks.
That's interesting. So just throwing out a sinister theory here, Roose Bolton, Rhea of Jaime Lannister, is in league with the Lannisters. He knew the Mountain was coming. He got himself and the Karstarks across and left whoever the heck was left.
Thumbed his nose at them.
Oh, the boats are sinking.
Right. It's possible. It's certainly, Roose is a very calculating man. Mm. You know, it's also possible that it could have been poor timing. Mm. And he chose the Manderly Knights to be the last ones across because they're knights. But
they might sink the boat.
They might. We don't know if all the Manderly men are
but as big as I will say to that it does add to the sort of sense of Rob and Kat being surrounded by enemies thing here.
Right.
I mean,
with the Karstarks.
The Karstarks and the Boltons. Karstarks are not exactly enemies, but they're not exactly friends. The Boltons are hard to read. The Freys,
yes,
are not exactly enemies, but they're not exactly friends. There's a lot of people of dubious loyalty surrounding them right now.
A lot of frenemies going on here. And it's also not good news generally that Willis Manderly was captured again because it compromises the Manderly's position to participate in the war.
Mm. Yeah.
They have to be a little more careful so that he doesn't get executed.
Yep.
So, and I'll mention that Ronald Stout gets a reference here.
He must be related to Sir Very Old Stout at the Wall.
Winton.
Yes,
Winton Stout.
I thought it when I saw it. I was like, hey, a Stout. It must be related.
I know that name. But so I agree with Roose. Well, I don't know if I agree with Roose. I think if Roose is on the up and up, he had a tough decision to make regarding what to do with the Karstarks. Because you either leave them behind at the Trident to hold the Trident and keep the Lannisters from getting across, or you don't trust them to do that, so you bring them here with you, and then you have them at the castle, and you don't trust them at the castle either.
Yeah, tricky.
It is.
And then the last part of the chapter is sort of like discussing what they might do with Theon, and I thought this was an interesting discussion because obviously Rob and Kat are ready for Theon to just get it in the neck. They are not ready to hear his defense. But the plan is not to ransom him for freedom, but to ransom him for execution.
Right.
Which is fascinating. Because yes, somebody's going to...
kind of turns the whole ransom thing on its
exactly,
head.
Exactly, yeah. We'll keep this guy alive unless you pay us enough. And then, if you pay us enough, we'll kill him, you know.
Yeah, and, you know, Roose's theory is that Theon has the best claim to the Seastone chair because he is the only son.
Yeah.
In some ways, but we were there on Pike with Theon, and we saw how much he was treated like an outsider.
True. Roose wasn't.
So, you know, Roose wasn't there.
Yes.
So you know, you and I can wonder how true Roose's thought is.
Well, that will just come down to the price. So let's say it's Euron Greyjoy wins the succession battle for the Seastone chair. It just comes down to price. It's like, well, you send him a raven saying, well, congratulations, or welcome to the big seven. We have a guy here who, like, really, honestly, he should be on the Seastone chair. What would you like us to do with him, and how much are you willing to pay? Euron could say, you can do whatever you want with him. I'm here and he's never dislodging me, you know.
Right, yes.
But he might say, I'll give you 20 gold pieces to get rid of him.
Send me his head.
Yeah, exactly.
20 gold pieces.
Yeah. All right, McKelly, why don't you hit us with some background? I bet you've got some good stuff today.
Well, I thought we'd focus on guest right today.
Okay, good.
Because Kat was very much focused on ensuring that the Stark-Tully group was protected by guest right while at the Twins, clearly to protect them from any kind of extreme aggressive response by the Freys to Robb's broken promise. Ultimately, of course, things seemed to go better than she feared. But let's look into guest right and see why she was so insistent they receive it. So first off, guest right is a sacred law throughout Westeros and the free cities of Essos. However, it's especially sacred in the north. According to a Maester Egbert, who wrote a book called Justice and Injustice in the North, Judgments of Three Stark Lords, Northerners consider only kinslaying to be an equal to breaking guest right.
Oh, interesting.
So it's a big deal up north. As
Kat
explains,
but the north begins at the neck, right? Just to be
right.
clear. And we
yes.
are south of the
yes.
neck right now.
Yes. So the phrase maybe don't have quite as much stock in it, but it's
yeah.
overall,
yeah.
It's pretty well
yeah, understood.
Accepted. As Kat tells us, when a guest, regardless of status, doesn't matter if they're king or peasant, eats and drinks from a host's table, guest right is invoked. This means the guest cannot be harmed, nor can the guest harm the host. It is widely believed that to break this sacred agreement brings about the wrath of both the old gods and the new. Now, I'm wondering about R'hllor. If R'hllor gets involved, then we've got a serious situation because we know yeah. R'hllor is vindictive.
And willing to flex.
Right. So there's this story about the rat cook. It's a well-known Westerosi parable regarding the ramifications of breaking guest right. So the rat cook was originally just a simple cook of the Night's Watch, but he was angered by a visiting king, and as retribution, the cook killed the king's son, chopped him up, and served him in a pie to the king. Unfortunately, the king enjoyed the taste of the pie so much he asked for seconds. All this angered the gods, and not just the murdering the prince part, but the violating of guest right. They turned the cook into a giant rat who could only eat his own young.
So wait, the violation of the guest rights there was the killing of the prince because the prince had eaten of the cook's food.
I guess so,
okay.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So that's guest right, and that's why Kat wanted it so badly, because
yeah.
especially in the north, they take it very seriously.
Right.
But as you pointed out, we're not in the north,
yeah.
So... still taken seriously, though, I would just say. The other thing I was going to mention is that Lord Walder tells Edmure that he is the hero of Stone Mill, and also that Edmure is the fifth Lord Tully that Walder has known. So, what is Stone Mill? Well, geographically speaking, it's the western crossing of the Red Fork. What he's referring to when he says that Edmure is the hero of Stonemill is that it was the location of the fiercest fighting during the Battle of the Fords. Edmure routed the mountain's men when the mountain and his men crossed the river, and Harwin told Arya not all that long ago that the mountain lost half his men in that particular fight. So that's what he was referring to when he said he was the hero of Stonemill. Now, the five Tullys that Lord Walder has known, obviously, this one, the fifth being Edmure, the fourth being his father, Hoster, who is Edmure and Kat's father. Then there are two unnamed Lord Tullys. And then we have Medgar Tully. So Medgar Tully died when Walder was somewhere between 1 to 3 years old. Walder was born in 208, and Medgar died somewhere between 209 and 211. We know he participated in the tourney at Ashford Meadow in 209. That was very much featured in the Dunk and Egg series. Yeah. He lost in his first tilt to Sir Humphrey Harding, if you're curious. But then he must have died within the next 2 years because the next check-in in 211 on a Lord Tully was an unnamed boy of 8. And that was also in the Dunk and Egg series. Okay. So when he says he knew five Tullys, he didn't really know Medgar all that well.
He's lived through five Tullys, but he didn't know. All right, so comparison with the television show, all of this is broadly in place with a couple of deviations. We don't have the scene with the direwolves and the welcoming party. We go straight to the throne room, and Walder Frey offers a greeting which includes bread and salt, and they all eat of bread and salt immediately. So he offered it.
Okay.
Kat didn't have to fish for it.
Right.
Well, I say he offered it. The scene starts with the bread and salt being passed around. So I don't know. Kat did ask for it. Grey Wind is not seen at all. He's seen earlier scene of them riding towards the twins. You see him plodding along, but you don't get any of his interaction with the Freys.
All right.
Jane, I'm putting Jane in quotes here because Rob's wife wasn't called Jane in the TV show, is present. And Walder does make very pointed comments about both her face and her body. And as Kat predicted, Rob reacts to that and she's forced to grab his arm and hold him back from getting angry, you see. Edmure does not meet his betrothed at this point. I'm speculating because I didn't want to look ahead to what's coming, but I'm guessing he's going to meet her on the wedding day rather than in advance.
Okay.
So,
wow. All right. Good stuff.
Pedantry, I don't have anything. I thought this was well done.
Yeah, me either.
All right.
Unfortunately.
That's fine.
Have anything to complain about.
I like it when there's no pedantry. I prefer it that way.
I do too. I agree.
News and notes.
So George Martin was out on the picket line in support of the Writers Guild of America strike there in Santa Fe, New Mexico. The strike is in its fourth week, and according to Martin, there's no sign of progress between the two sides, despite many production shutdowns. And speaking of production shutdowns, I told you in an earlier episode that House of the Dragon Season 2 won't be shutting down as the scripts were already pretty well set, and that is true. However, there are no writers on set for rewrites, which are pretty common, so it's possible that could delay the premiere of Season 2, which is already expected to not be out until sometime in 2024. So let's hope they power through and get it done on time.
And we received an amazing and preposterously generous gift from our Discord community in celebration of our forthcoming 200th episode. We're blown away by the thoughtfulness and generosity. We're not going to share it right on the socials until we get to 200. Is that the plan?
That is the plan, okay. Yes.
But thank you to all those involved. It was genuinely so exciting to receive. It really was. I was busy at work, but Michele would not shut up and would not leave me alone until I'd seen it for myself. And it was worth the risk to my career.
It was fantastic. Mm-hmm. And I look forward to sharing it with everyone, but I just want to say thank you to those involved right now.
We got a review from Apple Podcasts in the Netherlands. Ramon VH.
Yes. Tell them what Ramon VH had to say.
I'm sad I can't binge your podcast anymore. You can? Oh, I've listened to every episode. I see. I started noticing that it was getting closer to the current time when you guys talked about the World Cup, yes, in which my country, the Netherlands, kicked out the USA. They did. But, you know, hey, it's no disgrace losing to the Netherlands at soccer. They are really good at soccer, the Netherlands.
Okay, I'll take your word for it.
I love you two guys' banter. Keep on going. There's one small thing I find annoying. The way Simon says Melisandre. That's just a nitpick. What do I say? What do I? You wanted me to read this out, so I said that word again.
I say Melisandre. What do you say?
Oh, that's what I say, Melisandre. Oh, that's it. I bet it's that sandre at the end. Sort of like...
Yes, little... I say dr, you say dr.
Yeah. I can see that. I don't know how to change it, Ramon VH, but I'll call her Big Mel.
Big Mel.
Red Mel.
Yes, Red Mel. Yes, Red Mel. Mel the Red.
But thanks very much. That's a really kind review. And we'll keep going. You'll just have to go one episode a week, I'm afraid.
Yeah, now's a great time to either join the Buy Me a Coffee Sustainer tiers or the Discord server at least, and get your fix that way throughout the week.
You see, the other day someone joined called tea and books equals happiness.
Yes, I did. Good name.
It's a great name, and I must have caught it out of the corner of my eye because I was writing to somebody else on the Discord server, and I said, "All I need are tea and books," and I decided not to put it. And I was like,
I saw you write that. I didn't know if you were being legitimate.
No, I legitimately almost said, all I need in life is tea and books. And I decided not to write it. And then I noticed that tea and books equals happiness was in the Discord server. I was like, that's really strange. Cause and effect. I don't know which one came first there, you know, if it's just a weird coincidence. So.
Yeah. Subliminal messaging going
exactly,
on.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. Let's conclude. So it is going better than expected with the Twins so far. The phrase, not showing a great deal of respect to their king and liege lord, but they provided the prettiest Frey ever for their liege lord to marry. They mildly abused their king for his quite bad breaking of a vow.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, that wasn't so bad. You know,
A compromise deal, everyone's going to be a little bit unhappy, right? We're at that point. We found the middle ground.
All that, just like a parent, all that worry over not that much. Yeah. You know, just some barbs and rubbing the slight in their faces a bit.
The only person who might ruin this, I think, is Edmure, because the grin on his face might annoy the Freys so much that they want round two of the Rob eating humble pie.
Right, yes. Maybe that could be an issue. They didn't feel enough pain. We got to do it again.
Yeah, look at him. He's not sad.
Yeah, I mean, you know, now that we've gotten all this unpleasantness out of the way, can all just be water under the bridge?
Ah, stop already with your jokes. Good grief.
Well, you know, I need to throw a good dad joke in there every now and then. I'm not sure if it's good dad joke, a dad joke.
And so Roose Bolton is back in the fold, and he's his usual sort of like tangential relationship with the truth, self-serving and pretty dishonest, basically. He is to blame for the debacle at Duskendale.
Yes. Yeah. You know, we know he's lying about that.
Yeah.
So it's hard to know what he's being honest about and what he isn't being honest about. And, you know, you brought it up. Could he have known that the attack from the mountain was coming and handpicked who he was going to leave behind on the southern side of the bank? It's possible, because we don't know, because he's not always honest.
Having said it, I fear I've brought it into reality. I had a little chill up my spine then as you said it.
And, you know, he paints Ramsay as the hero of the North, who one of the lines he has is that Ramsay says he will not put down his sword until every Ironborn is removed from the North. You know, does he know? Does he know what Ramsay's been up to? Or is he getting fed the same stuff from Ramsay?
Think that Lady Danella Hornwood's fingers were Ironborn?
Yes.
The thing that I remember, huh? I mean, yeah, all the stuff that I've forgotten, but Lady Donella's fingers, they are stuck in my brain. That Ramsay, and that Ramsay Snow is a rotter. A rotter.
He is, no worst. Doubt. And, you know, Roose, it seems like good advice for Roose to suggest to keep Theon alive while, you know, they get
think concessions. It is. I do think that one is solid advice.
Yeah, you just have to look a little bit at Roose. You have to look at him from different angles to see what's going on and what he's thinking about things.
Yeah. But anyway, I mean, but sufficient forces from Roose, from Harrenhal, basically, to mean that the attack on the Neck is on. So just get through these nuptials. Get Edmure to tone down the skipping around and joy. It's
quit looking so happy.
It's not
man.
One of the plain phrase.
Right. Yeah, it seems like Rob's going to be heading north very soon, and that could be really fun, exciting set of chapters coming up. Of course, we're going to need a new POV to see the fighting at Moat Cailin, because Kat's going to Seagard.
With Jason Mallister.
With Jason. Could we hear wedding bells again fairly soon?
Who are we going to hear from next?
Well, we are going to make a quick jump, staying here in the Riverlands, to visit Arya, who makes it to the Twins.
Oh my goodness, the family's going to get back together. I'm so excited.
Does she make it in time for the wedding? Well, we can have to see, but that's where we'll be next week, is with Arya and the Hound and their arrival with the Twins.
All right, there's four ways to help us. I thought I'd say it like it was spliced in afterwards. There are four ways to help us.
Four ways to help us.
Leave us a 5-star rating and a positive review. Buy merchandise at ghostsofharrenhal.threadless.com. Buy us a cup of Arbor Gold at buymeacoffee.com/ghostharrenhal. Become a sustainer at the Lord Paramount or Knight of the Realm level, and you can come and hang out and find out what amazing skills Mikeli and I have beyond that, which you already know.
Right.
Or you can even just donate to our cause through our website, ghostsofharrenhal.buzzsprout.com.
We will certainly appreciate all of those things. And of course, you could reach us. It says these two jokers. Did you change that?
It's because it's a cat chapter, right? Jenny was the last cat chapter.
Oh, that's right. I thought you changed it to these two jokers. And as always, you can reach us at ghost.harrenhal@gmail.com or go out and follow us on our social medias, on Twitter @ghostharrenhal. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Discord, and YouTube.
It didn't make sense for her to say us, because you can't really reach Jenny through that email address, you know. So these two jokers, it made perfect sense. Okay, thanks for listening.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.